At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Jay Allen Show. I hope everything is good and grand inside of your neck of the woods. I have to tell you, it seems like it's been a while since we've had our last conversation. Keep in mind, as we're kind of putting the context to this, over the last few weeks, we've been taking a listen to the episodes that we recorded at Safety Day 2021 here in the glorious Orlando, Florida. So today we get to hold a conversation in real time, I guess is really how you get to take a look at it. So this is an interview that I did with Joshua Kreger. Josh is a visionary leader of human and organizational performance and has 10 years of enterprise safety and risk management leadership experience in some high consequences industry such as critical infrastructure, energy, and intermodal transportation. He holds a Master's of Science in Organizational Leadership from the University of Denver with an emphasis of strategic innovation and change. Josh is currently a Director of Safety and Innovation and Strategy for the company that he works for. So I'm not going to take up too much of your time at the very beginning of this thing. And let's get started with this conversation with Joshua Kreger here on The Jay Allen Show.
The Jay Allen Show is streaming now on safetyfm.live.
So, of course, my easiest question is also the hardest question all at the same time. You know that already. So how did you get involved in this little tiny world of safety? Where was the desire to jump into this mess?
So, like, this is going to sound like a familiar story, but like most people, I fell butt backwards into it. Did years of operations management in the hospitality industry right out of undergrad. And, you know, before that, always had a blue collar background, worked in a lot of different trades through college and in high school. So I've been sort of peripherally aware of safety. You know, when you're 17 years old, you have no appreciation for it. I can remember doing many of drilling without earplugs and whatnot. So, I just was operations management and then got a little fried in about 2008. So quit my six-figure job about a month before the housing market collapsed in 08. Kind of serendipitous though, because my wife was getting ready to apply for med school at the time. And she's like, hey, I want to go to this place called Federal Way, Washington. And I want to join this program called AmeriCorps. And I want you to come with me. And again, she wasn't my wife at the time. And I said, well, one, where the hell's Federal Way, Washington? And then two, what the hell's AmeriCorps? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I went from sort of this 80-hour a week cutthroat industry making tons of money to I'm teaching math and science to low-income district children after about a three-week indoc on how to teach math and science in a high school. So it was kind of like, hey, warm body degree, pass background check, off you go. So that's how I left my industry. And then we ended up moving to Denver in 2011 for some bigger opportunities. And that's where I got my first job, you know, just trying to find a gig, just coming in, trying to rebuild my professional career. And I got on as a DOT compliance specialist with.
Oh, the love there. I am so familiar with DOT. How did you like that gig?
Again, it's interesting looking back on. I'm glad I have that foundation in some part of my brain. But, you know, it's very rote. It's very much, you know, I hate anomalies. So I was really good at digging through DOT files and catching things on drug tests and whatnot. It was a good entry into the discipline. And then sort of just evolving from there into enterprise leadership from a safety perspective. I had that already had that leadership piece in my background, and then getting into safety was sort of like, oh, you also know how to lead? I'm like, yeah. And then it sort of snowballed from there.
But that's one hell of a change. I mean, let's talk about it. You left a six-figure job. You go into teaching. I mean, that is a hell of a change. But then you go into DOT after that. as you're going through these changes, are you seeing like your long term on what you're planning on to do trajectory wise? Like, what are your journey as at that portion? Because I can't imagine you're looking at destination at that point. You have to be looking at journey. So what are you thinking at this time?
Well, you know, Jay, the passion is leadership, and it's all leadership. So whether it was in a restaurant, it's opening new restaurants all over the Midwest, whether it was trying to, teach poor kids who probably didn't eat for 3 days how to do algebra, to, hey, now we got to figure out a way to, run drug and alcohol and DOT compliance for 2,100 union represented employees. To me, it was that leadership piece, and I'm always chasing that next leadership challenge. I just happen to have these little superpowers as I pick them up along the way.
Well, it's a nice little superpower. So shortly thereafter, out of that DOT compliance gig, as you get into the regional health and safety manager position, you pick up a certificate that I'm extremely interested in by Echelon Front, which is, of course, Extreme Ownership, which is the Jacko Willing Company. How the hell do you get into that? How did you like this?
Yeah, so I have a buddy who's a retired Navy SEAL, and I kind of just fell into the Jocko thing via that. But, by the time I found Jocko in 2015, I'd already been a leader for, over 12 years. And I kind of realized I don't know anything about leadership. And that's okay. Not to say that Jocko is this guru that everything he does is not unique. It goes back to Sun Tzu. I could grab Peter Decker. I could grab a bunch of different books. Drucker. I could grab all kinds of leadership books, and they all kind of make sense. But, I just was drawn to this idea of ownership, and it started with me looking in the mirror. It was the fat guy in the mirror going, Jay, that was your opportunity to say I'm not fat.
But I was waiting. I was not going to interrupt.
there are no bad teams, only bad leaders. Like, wow, what a statement. And as I started to onboard Extreme Ownership, I actually got to meet Jocko. I do a lot of work with them now. I actually see them 3 times a week. And it was just that game changer for me going, even when my employee steals and causes a problem, that's my fault. I own that. And it's just that sort of internal pressure you put on yourself as a leader is what really attracted me to that philosophy. And I hope everyone can at least give it a shot. I know people get a little wigged out about the military Navy SEAL deal, but man, leadership is agnostic. It doesn't matter. That's why I know SEALs right now who run tech companies, billion-dollar tech companies. And it's because leadership's agnostic.
So as you're developing this leadership and you're realizing more and more some of the stuff that you have read in the past, some of the things that you're moving forward with, and you're seeing these different concepts inside of the world of safety as you're moving forward, because you've been focusing on leadership, what are you kind of seeing that they bring together, especially when you start seeing these different things where it's to some extent, some people might take it too harsh on how they, will kind of turn around and say on how they pursue and punish to some extent. So how can you distinguish the leadership from punishment? Because most leaders, depending on how they lead, won't take responsibility on their own. It's this person's, it's their fault, and you kind of move forward, get them out of here, and then the same issue occurs. So have you been able to blend the two worlds together?
Well, I tell you, so I consult with 56,000 different businesses in Colorado. Those are all my customers. And, I try to reiterate, you can punish or you can learn, but you can't do both. But that is not very intuitive, especially to small business owners, right? It's so personal when something bad happens to an employee, even though they're empathetic. It shuts down production. It increases their mod, increases their premium and insurance. It increases a whole kind of things. And so they want to punish. And we can all remember, for those of us from the construction industry, as soon as someone gets hurt, the GC, I expect this employee to get punished. And that's the unfortunate sort of failure of the discipline at this point, because that is hat in hand right now in the discipline. And I wonder if it'll ever be different. I think we need to get some senior leaders in the C-suite who actually innovate inside safety instead of focusing on innovation all over their business and then just rolling out the same crap from 1986 in safety from a performance measurement standard. But I try to teach my customers that as soon as you punish, you can't learn. And so it's easy to punish, but the learning is what's going to keep people out of the hospital and out of the morgue. And that's that that piece that I try to turn with that corner we try to turn with those customers, but it is so hard because it is so intimate. When one of your workers get hurt, either you feel emotionally attached to them and it's painful, and or they've caused a ruinous act in your business and it's now compromising your livelihood.
So when you start having those difficult conversations with your customers, how do they handle this? Of course, they're the ones that are normally calling you. So how does this work out?
Well, again, they don't want to hear that it's their fault.
Well, I mean, but you're telling it to them.
I do tell them that. And it's all in how you present it, right? And I try to use examples. This is where my superpower just coming into this, stagnated industry in insurance safety. As an operational leader, I kind of tell those stories. I do that storytelling for when I was in operations. And, at the end of the day, I have to explain that you have to own this. And when you punish them, the next incident is on you because you chose punishment over learning. And punishment feels better. Punishment's quick. Punishment is intuitive. And it feels like you've done something. It's like these guys, these preppers, right? They'll go buy 700 guns and then they can barely get up their stairs without wheezing. it's focusing on the wrong thing, but they feel this sense of accomplishment because I've stockpiled weapons. I'm ready for everything, but then you can't tie your shoes. So it's really just teaching them that you have to make a stand now. And it starts with you as a leader. You own everything in your world as a leader. And I actually teach more extreme ownership than I do OSHA compliance.
So when you go in and do something like that, where you're actually presenting in that fashion, where you're going, okay, extreme leadership, not so much OSHA. Do you kind of get the weird look or the weird conversation afterwards by some of the senior management inside of these different organizations because they have X expectation because this is what they've grown accustomed to, but you're trying to tell them, hey, no, you need to really take some responsibility.
Yeah. The OSHA thing is, it's their life, right? We have to report out on this. So gee whiz, why not make it our performance measure for safety as an enterprise? And I try to do that in a way that, doesn't insult their intelligence because these are brilliant people that run these companies. They're part of this same system. And sadly, and this is where I will kind of call out the profession a little bit, they're relying on the people like you and me, Jay, to make the right decision and recommend the right things that will work. So like, hey boss, let's set up a just culture. Well, what's that? Well, let me give you this book. It's starting that journey, and that's on us as safety leaders to not lead up the chain. We do really good at leading down the chain, backslapping at safety meetings, discussing with foremen how to run a safety program at the work site. We seem to sort of pause and get inside our own fears when it's time to lead up the chain of command, which again is another foundation of extreme ownership, is being able to walk up to your CEO or walk up to your superintendent and go, this isn't working. It looks like it's working because the number is zero right now on the board. But you and I know that all of a sudden something's going to blow up and 8 people are going to die. And then we're going to go, how did we go from 500 million man hours on injury to 8 people dead? That's something we want to discuss before it happens.
So being as you have that understanding and you're trying to open the eyes of people in different industries with this, what's some of the pushback that you're getting? Because I know that that's not an easy pill to swallow.
Yeah, the pushback, people don't want to suck at safety. The pushback is operational pressure. I don't know, COVID, lumber being $700,000 per square foot. It's these external pressures that always beat safety. Safety loses to operational pressure every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And the pushback I get is we can't afford it, or we don't have the motivator at the business. We're talking to the poor HR individual who knows someone's going to die, who knows this isn't good, who knows OSHA's going to come in and wrap $100,000 of fines on us. But they don't have the skills. They don't have the stream ownership skills to teach it up the chain. That's where we come in again and teach that. But the big pain is affordability, time, and any barrier anything that would put a barrier in front of the now is the big struggle that we face on the consultant level, even in an operations where I was the enterprise safety and loss control manager for the largest gravity fed water system in the country. I still face that pressure. I had tremendous power. I shut down a multi-million dollar construction project in 2018. The pressure that came down on me, but I was equipped to deal with that. But, you know, someone earlier in their career might just completely fold and then they'll never do that again because you start to enter the self-preservation mode as a safety professional. And all of us are always paranoid about losing our jobs.
No, I mean, I think that most of the times, if you take a look, especially inside of the safety profession, it becomes extremely interesting because you have those compliance pressures. You have that safety pressure where you have what some people might call safety fix it, where you have to know a little bit of everything to be able to fix it. But then if things are going what some might deem well across the board, then it's all of a sudden, well, do we need this particular safety person where it might be too expensive and just replace them with somebody who might be inexpensive in comparison? So it becomes a very strange thing. So when you decide to do this, when you're working for the largest water provider there, what happens? Do you get the phone call when you shut it down? Are you getting calls, call after call? What the hell are you doing? Or what kind of pressure is being put upon you at this time? If you remember, of course.
Yeah, I mean, 8 a.m. I shut it down via email. I would say by 9 I find out that the CEO of that construction company is called the vice president of public affairs, who's now talked to my executive, who's now in my office asking what happened. And you better be ready to rumble, right? To use Brene Brown's quote, you know, it's, but so many of us in safety, here's the thing, safety professional, it requires a lot of analytical attention to detail, not always conducive to the best leadership. And you, if you don't have that, if you don't have sort of that courage, that bravery as a leader, you're going to just go, okay, well, I guess it's not that big of a deal. You'll look for ways out. And yeah, it came down on me and I am looking at this could be the end of it. Right. And so, you know, here's the thing, Jay, safety is just localized rationality in the moment. We make decisions based on what we knew at the time. And then sometimes we're wrong or sometimes we didn't know something and someone gets hurt. And so I shut down that project. I had like one email from a foreman that said someone was going to die. And based on my relationship with that foreman, I pulled the pin on that grenade. I didn't have all the information. I mean, for me, I wanted like 7 more pages of what's going on. I wanted photos. I want to talk to other people. No, you know, again, it goes back to extreme ownership. Look around, stop, look around and make a call. Here you go. Here's your email. Is someone going to die in between the time I'm kind of fumbling around with this, looking for information? So I feel more comfortable with making the decision because safety professionals, we want to hedge as much as we can. That's not the game we play. And that's honestly, you do a disservice to the employees you're responsible for protecting by doing that.
So as you look back now in retrospective, because that's the only thing that we can do now, do you feel based on the amount of information that you have or had at the time, better saying, did you make the right call?
I did make the right call, but I also burned up some significant leadership capital doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
You can only do that so many times before, you know, to cry wolf or that you just start to lose confidence. Your senior leadership starts to lose confidence in you. But based on the information at the time, you know, I'm pulling off experience. It's more of that. Does it pass the smell test? You know, having leadership experience in the past, I don't know if I had the relationship with that individual that I did, would I have trusted him? But then again, is that the right decision to make? What if I don't have a relationship, but this person's got a legitimate concern?
Oh, you so knew where I was going next.
Yeah. Well, go for it.
No, that was exactly what I was going to ask you next. What if somebody else would have actually said the same scenario, but you didn't have the same relationship with them? Would then what it would have been, the decision would have been the same? And I know that all this is retrospective and woulda, coulda, shoulda, woulda, and all that kind of, you know, glass crystal ball stuff. But I'm always interested on, you know, when you have to make the difficult decision, because it is a difficult decision.
Yeah.
When you have to look back, how do you feel about it?
I would have still stopped it.
Okay.
And that's because I'd rather live with a termination than live with the worst case scenario.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, some people will get sanctimonious about, well, you can't stop everything. And then some people will get even more sanctimonious and say, you need to stop everything.
Right.
You pick and choose your battles. You earn more leadership capital than you burn. And I had enough leadership capital built up to pull that pin. And that's another, you know, piece of advice I would give to these junior leaders in safety. Be building up leadership capital every opportunity, because when you do need to burn it, boy, it goes quick.
Now that you pulled the pin, everything started moving on. You stopped everything. Everything's going. How long is the site closed down for before everything's within the realm of you being comfortable with moving forward with it?
It was like 12 hours, a couple million.
So there was people gunning for you, I would imagine, during that time. as you were saying earlier, people calling, calling, calling. And I can imagine if that's hour one, by hour five, they're wanting your head on a lance.
Well, then internally, you know, that's also our sales internally. Right. You know, that's water sales for us. So it's not just this construction company who's on a deadline. It's also our internal water sales. And, you know, it is every hour in the hour. And it's here's what I always tell individuals in operations. I will always say, prove to me it's safe. I'm not going to take your word for it. And they proved it was safe. And I said, okay, I'm comfortable with it. Just having their attention and having them, you know, hey, can you remove your ban? I said, it's not a ban. I'm doing you a favor. This is going to be worse for you if we kill people. But yeah, it just proved to me it's safe. And sometimes we don't ask those questions as safety professionals. We just sort of, we cower in the moment.
Well, because also at the same time, it's an emotional event for some, especially when it comes to the operation side, because now you've closed down the business. And let's be realistic. I have an operation background. And if you would have told me that before I started looking into anything in safety, you closed down part of my operation because of a potential safety related thing, I might have not been too happy about it. So how do you handle that emotional distress that's going on? Because it's coming your way. It's fireballing your way, regardless on how you look at it.
Yeah. You know, nothing's ever been accomplished by panicking. And again, that's another, I would say, extreme ownership tenet is, you know, you have to detach emotionally. And if you can't detach emotionally, you are going to get overwhelmed by that moment because, you know, this is all on you and you don't have all the information. And if, you know, if all of a sudden you find out you've got information that you didn't have an hour ago and you, on paper now, in retrospect, you know, it's kind of like, hey, these preventable accidents we talk about, right? Like, well, they're only preventable once the thing's crashed. Same thing. It was only a bad call now that I have this entire ream of paper on what was going on. And it's just being able to weather that and standing your ground, either morally, ethically, or, you know, immorally. You got to take a stand. And if you care more about your job than your personal beliefs, then you're in the wrong business.
Well, I appreciate you actually going into that because most people would not give that much detail. So I do appreciate you going down that path. Now, I got a question for you because you see a little bit of everything, of course. If you were building out your own company and you had to actually, well, let's say that we still have a safety department inside of this organization that you're running, where do you see that the safety department should actually report to? If you were building it out, it was your company, your name's on the door. How does that company report?
To the chief safety officer, who happens to be the chief executive officer.
Okay.
You know, safety is not really a discipline, Jay. It's not a professional discipline. It's a core competency of leadership. And again, I talk about it a lot. We hire these really brilliant people to run these companies. And then it's like a doctor, right? Like a surgeon gets 2 weeks of nutrition training and then all of a sudden we expect them to know something about nutrition, but they act like they do, right? Oh yeah, you shouldn't be eating that. Well, it's like, you're great at surgery. Do you know anything about what I'm putting in my digestive tract? I don't think so.
No.
Same thing with these CEOs. They know enough to be dangerous. They know enough to say the platitudes. Yep, safety culture. Yep, not one injury, what have you. They don't know what they're looking at. And so when I start a company, I want the CEO to be the most passionate about safety. I definitely don't want them to be the subject matter expert, but I want them to have the most passion, and it can't be these empty platitudes and these posters, right? This is why I despise safety posters. They should be used for target practice. It's really, safety is not a poster. Safety is an expression of culture, and the ultimate expression of culture is decentralized command. And that's what we need from these senior leaders. That's why, to be honest, I do want to be a CEO. I'll be a terrible CEO, but I just want to run the safety program I think should be run. And then I'm probably going to retire because we'll be out of business in 2 weeks. But I think that we can pull it off. And so that's one day I want to be a CEO just so I can implement safety as I've always wanted to see it implemented, either as an employee or as a leader underneath that.
Well, you know how some of the sports figures sign the one day contract to go back to a team. Maybe you're going to make an arrangement like that. You can be like a CEO for a day and give it a whirl.
Yeah. I mean, I still think that. And that's why, you know, again, not to harp on Jocko, but the reason companies pay him millions of dollars to come in and basically run the company for 6 to 8 months is because it is leadership. He doesn't know anything about running Pepsi or running these other companies. He's looking for holes in your leadership curriculum or your leadership culture and filling them for you. And this is like, I hope one day the safety discipline get to the point. And we do have some. I actually have a buddy who consults, shout out Magpie, Safety for Humans, a company that would really come in and do that type of work for you and educate those senior leaders. I mean, every CEO should have at least one confidant in enterprise safety. That's not part of the business. I feel like that's super important. I just don't know how prioritized that is.
Well, and that's a great question, because here's the thing. Sometimes when you're so close, when you have it so close to the chest, you don't realize the gaps that are there. So that's why the outside consultants come about. So it's always interesting on when you especially see big name consultants come in and take a view on what's going on, especially when you look at somebody like Jacko that we've been kind of talking about here for the last little bit on, he runs it for X period of time. Mm-hmm. And of course there's a cost affiliated or associated to the whole thing. So when you look at that in the grand schemes, do you think that's value added because of the holes that are than most organizations have?
I do. And I think, you know, again, as a senior leader in an organization, you live in a world of lies of omission, right? Well, you didn't ask. So I'm not going to tell you. Boy, that is absolutely present in safety because, you know, even the near misses, right? We like to report those. I don't know if we report them all. I don't know if we report the scariest ones. Having those fresh eyes. I mean, I, again, at the water utility, we led the largest cultural study in the history of that organization. And we used an outside consultant, and we gleaned things we never knew. You know, safety is really that middle out, right? It's not, you hear it's top down. That's not the case.
This is the Jay Allen Show.
You know how sometimes you're out and about and sometimes you have to access a report, maybe your bank account, maybe something that's important to you, but you don't want other people to be able to access it? I know you're probably sitting there for a moment going, well, why don't you just go into incognito mode and use that instead? Well, let me tell you something real quick. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browser's history. Your internet service provider can still see every single website you visited. And that's why even when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter who your internet provider is. It can be Verizon, Comcast, or even AT&T. The ISP in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites that you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the times, I don't even realize I have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background and is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all of your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit my exclusive link at expressvpn.com/safety. And you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/safety. expressvpn.com/safety to learn more.
And we are back on the Jay Allen Show on Safety FM.
So, yeah, I was just talking to the value of outside consulting, and this is a good segue to talk about, you know, what I do today, because, you know, I'm a big fan of Steve Jobs. I think he's the Da Vinci of our generation. I'm probably not the best human being, but, you know, right, as far as being innovative and just being a visionary, you know, I look up to him a lot. And there's a great YouTube clip of him where he goes bad on consultants, you know, and how we don't have any skin in the game and yada, yada, yada. He's not wrong, except at where I work. And so Pinnacle Assurance, we're a monoline insurance carrier in the state of Colorado. We operate more like a mutual insurance company because we're just peripherally attached to the state. But our vision is a revolution in caring. And the only reason I came to work here, I did not want to come work for insurance, man. I mean,
I was going to ask you, how do you make that transition?
Oh, man. I mean, I'm telling you, as an enterprise safety leader for years, you know, the things that my insurance attaches brought me from a safety perspective. I mean, it was drive-by loss control from 1986. It's a lot of survey. It was almost like, hey, here comes their cost-based justification of their job this month. And then if you want the good stuff, that here's the price for that. So I just coming into insurance, I'm like, no way. But I'd also grown so exhausted of the discipline because I wasn't seeing innovation. I'm not seeing a lot of courage. And, you know, we've got the books, we've got the academic publishing. That's great. We've got UJ in the field. It's just not happening. It is happening in small pockets at great companies, but across the globe, again, I work for 56,000 customers. It is an anomaly. And so the opportunity to come to insurance and Pinnacle asking me, hey, we want you to teach our customers how to do safety differently, pun intended, or how to do HOP. We don't want cost-based justification of jobs. We don't want drive-by loss control. We want to have an intimate relationship with our customers because we care about them. And sometimes you're the only contact they have at our company. And so just being asked to do that and then build digital products along the way as sort of an add-on, it was just a great opportunity. And if things are going to change, I think it will come in the safety discipline. It will come from insurance because we have access to all these great customers. We have the best intelligence. And again, I don't like the word data because data is kind of worthless without context around it.
Right.
But when we take that data and we turn it into intelligence, man, the predictive tools we can build, the insights we can provide to businesses, the coaching and mentoring I can do, whether it's a bakery one day or a massive manufacturer the other day, it's this opportunity to experiment and push up and out a new era of safety. We've written about it a lot in books. We talk about it on podcasts. It's time to actually disseminate that across businesses in a variety of different industries. And insurance is the best place to do that if the company will let you do that type of work.
So right now, where would you see the biggest disconnect when it comes to that? Because as you're saying, there's a lot of good books. There's a lot of people talking about it. There's people shoulda, coulda, woulda, wanna do it, blah, blah, blah. So where do you see we can start making those connections? You're saying building digital applications to do so. Where would you see the best value? If right now you could say, okay, we're going to deploy here, where would you say the deployment needs to take place?
Well, first, again, I maybe broke a record on the leadership piece. Do I have the leadership infrastructure in place to deploy cool things?
Let's say yes for this one.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely want a cell phone that's been turned into a wearable that is frictionless for the user and is actually provides actionable intelligence throughout the worker's day so they can use it to not get hurt. They can use it to meet their minimum qualifications for training, either internally or OSHA compliance or what have you. I want a frictionless way to report up and out on concerns. And then I also, you know, I would love to go as deep as get to the Minority Report for you old enough to remember that movie where...
I think our listeners will know that movie.
Yeah, I want to know what your blood pressure is in the trench on a summer day. And I want to be able to do that as a safety professional on my phone while I'm at lunch with a customer.
Okay. So now you want precogs is what you're pretty much telling me.
Pretty much. Yeah. And, you know, it's not going to happen, but I think if we even aspire to that level, if we fall short of that, it's still further ahead than we've ever been. I also think just the, you know, safety two is such a great thing that showed up, especially for me, where I had grown up in safety one. And then I'm like, this is terrible. I mean, this is not, I can't do this for my entire life. And then you start to unravel safety two and you're like, oh, wow. But how do I implement that when, again, my chain of command grew up in this dysfunction from a safety perspective? And I have to have the leadership piece first to educate my boss, my boss's boss, so that I can get to that point where I can implement safety too. We don't have that right now as a safety profession. You'd be lucky if you get that CSP at this point, you know? And that's why I always tell my people, you know, I've got 19 CSPs on my team. Hey, we're done studying safety. We need to be able to lead because anybody is a leader, no matter their station in life, when they step up and lead. And my consultants are leaders. And the ultimate form of leadership is when you're mentoring someone and they don't know you're doing it. And that's that piece in insurance that we can do if we choose to not be ad hoc auditors for underwriting, which I think is not good. You know, that's why we have underwriting. Once you're signed on, we're in this together, baby. And we want to get you to a point where, one, you never not renew with us because you love our experience. And then, two, you start to see the real-time ROI of safety at your business.
So as you look at this across the board and a lot of the things that you want to implement, and as you're going through further into what you were saying, when you look at the whole CSP aspect, being as you're saying there should be more of a focus on leadership, do you see a value still in having a CSP?
Yes, I don't want to go bad. I love the BCSP. Shout out to the BCSP. Don't pull my credential. I love you guys. Here's the thing. There's a lot of imposters in safety, right, Jay? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of imposters. It's a job. If you've turned a wrench in your life and you can speak the language, you can get a job in safety. The CSP helps show that that safety professional wants to get out of bed and be better every day. And, you know, it's a good way to go. You know, on the flip side of that, just because you don't have it doesn't mean you're not an outstanding safety professional. But I think it's a way to, especially right now, I'm trying to hire a junior leader on my team. By the way, if you're interested in that, pinnacle.com, you know, the CSP, you start to see it come in and you start to see it come in and you go, okay, is the leadership piece there? And so my hope is one day that credential starts to evolve into more leadership because, you know, the ASP, that's really your nerd cert. And, you know, shout out to all the nerds. I took the ASP too, by the way, it's way harder. So if you've already passed the ASP and you haven't gotten the CSP, just go get it. It's way easier. You know, CSP, and there's some leadership curriculum in there, but like, you know, where is the ability to walk in day one and have a superintendent go, I'm not doing that. No. Where do I go from there? Where's the SOP for that? I've got all the credentials. I've got the experience. I got my books. I got my heart at. This so-and-so has been here 30 years and they just said, no, what's your next step?
And what is the next step? I mean, that's the difficult one because here's the thing. We did some research and looking at the different designations that there are available in safety. There's over 350. And of course, there's a value put on to CSP. There's other organizations that are trying to come about and say, hey, ours is as important as CSP, but it focuses on X, Y, or Z, you know, whatever. So this is what I try to take a look at. How can we put a value on one over another? And when you start talking about, we're starting to get to the point where we'll say plateau for the portion of this conversation, where leadership needs to be an essential piece. And yes, book knowledge is great. Don't get me wrong. But do we start looking at it of, hey, maybe at some point we start looking at maybe leadership might be a little bit more important than a certification?
Yeah, I agree. And it really, it would depend on your job, right? If you're a safety engineer working on, you know, a chemical processing manufacturing plant, it's definitely helpful to have a CSP. But, you know, you're right, the leadership piece. And then guess what I've been studying for the last 5 years? It's been less safety and been more user experience and service design. And people are always weirded out by that. And, you know, why are you studying UX and UI? And yeah, yes, I'm in the digital product game, but part of the problem with safety is it's incredibly boring. It's not user-friendly. And again, do you use things, Jay, that you find boring or not easy to use, right? That kind of gets shifted to the side. So as a safety professional, you're already trying to sell the hardest product to sell in the world, which is safety, whether it's a training, whether it's a standard process. And so if you can start to design experiences and services around that, that's enjoyable for the end user, that's another way with the leadership piece. If you start to couple the book knowledge with the user experience knowledge and the leadership knowledge, now you've got sort of this triangle that can really be effective in getting safety to be utilized. And then it's only going to get utilized if you can effectively sell it up the chain of command of your business.
So I'm going to make an assumption here. You're a big Salesforce guy.
Well, it's funny because we're in the process of going to Salesforce. I love Salesforce. I mean, I'm kind of software agnostic. I can tell you a lot of stuff I hate. Like, if your core system's in COBOL, I'm leaving the company.
I don't blame you. You should be gone. No, but the only reason I say that is because a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, when you start taking a look at some of the stuff that Salesforce can do, especially with some of the information technology, and you start taking a look at some of the digital aspects you're talking about, they almost go hand in hand. And especially you already being insurance. Oh my Lord, would that make it so much easier?
Yeah. And again, if you're having employees stop work and come into an auditorium to do safety training in 2021, you're just behind the power curve. And safety is being marginalized every day at your business because your senior leaders are getting frustrated with you as a safety professional. You've got to start to remove the friction from that process. Otherwise, safety is going to lose to operational pressure every time. And so there's this idea that why can't a crew jump on their phone and take a training real quick over lunch? Why do they have to come back to the office, jump on the computers from 10 years ago and start to click through things? They're not absorbing any of it. There's zero knowledge transfer. They're clicking through it to meet the minimum quals on whatever industry you're in. as safety professionals, we have got to innovate in just the delivery of it. I mean, forget the whiz bang kind of predictive tool, which again, I'm going to build one day. Can you just get the training more streamlined, right? We cannot continue to try to make this argument that we need to stop working to do X, Y, and Z, especially the more commonplace the training is. Okay, time for HAZCOM again. That has got to be on the phone. You've got to figure out what a way. And I think the safety professionals focus on the delivery of the service just as much as the quality of the consultation. I think it's a winning combination.
So do you look at it now then with everything that has been going on during the pandemic, that technology has advanced in what we do for a living? Do you look at that some of the safety stuff has advanced, or do you look at it that we might even just be coming even with the rest of the planet on some of the other aspects that are going on?
So this is a great question. When I got to Pinnacle, you know, I got 16 consultants. I got an ergonomist, I have an industrial hygienist, and then I have three leader managers underneath me. For the first time in 105 years, they started consulting virtually during the pandemic. They used to only be able to do 133 site visits, and we're now 10x that virtually. We still go in the field when we need to, but all I heard when I got here is you can't do safety virtually. Like, that's going to be horrible. And lo and behold, now we're doing field audits virtually. We figured that out. And we're also teaching and educating. We do more webinars than we've ever done. We do more training than we've ever done. Because guess what? It's less friction. Oh, you mean we don't need to stop work and come in and see you? It's like, no, I'll be on Zoom at this time, or will you tell me what time it works for you? And I will teach to this topic for less than 15 minutes and we're out of here. And that's sort of this gravitational pull away from field ops and insurance. And, you know, some of my peers in the industry, they just stopped working during the pandemic. Oh, we can't go out and do our checklist. I guess our job's over. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was talking to a peer in another state. I won't say which one, but they had.
You can't even say the state? Come on.
No, because then she'll know I'm talking about her. But it was like July, and they still didn't have Zoom licenses. They had no capacity to consult outside the walls of their business. And so it's been a game changer for us. And I can touch 10x more customers virtually, and then we still hold that in-field touch in our back pocket when we need it. That's been a big innovation. And then just the technology piece, I mean, it's given us a lot of time to focus on, like you said, professional development, not just CSPs or whatever your flavor is, but that leadership piece. That, I mean, my whole team is read Extreme Ownership. They're reading them all. They debrief it every day as a team. We had that gift of time during the pandemic that I think a lot of safety professionals didn't leverage in the insurance industry. And then those of my peers in construction who never stopped working, now you've got, Jay, you've got brilliant CSPs taking temperatures every day and doing nothing else while the hazards that are still killing us every day are going on behind them. And that was sort of the ultimate tragedy of COVID for the safety discipline, is really smart people already didn't have time to play whack-a-mole with all the known hazards. And all of a sudden they're taking temperatures to meet this minimum compliance. And, you know, in insurance, unfortunately, I see every time someone dies, I get an email in our book of business. And I'm going, I wonder if that safety professional was busy taking a temperature when that thing happened. Or I wonder if there wasn't time for a training because we're taking temperatures. And again, that doesn't mean taking temperatures weren't important. I think what we need to do is, do you need a certified safety professional to take temperatures? Or could we have trained someone real quick to just take temperatures real quick? And that was sort of, you know, in one way, the COVID's been a boon for the safety industry. I know, I mean, especially emergency management, I've been in all three disciplines in operations. And at worst now, we've got sort of this recognition that, boy, we better have resilience from a safety perspective if and when something like this happens again. And that's sort of been a win for the discipline.
I mean, it's been an interesting time on some of the things that safety professionals have had to do during the time frame, especially as you're saying, even going out as far as just taking temperatures. It did really change some of the environment, because it was, okay, let's put plexiglass up. Let's have these barriers. And I mean, I don't even know if you remember when people were starting out putting out those digital monitors where you could see an infrared on the distance on how it was measured. It was like, okay, we're getting a little bit extreme here. But it's interesting on seeing some of the changes. Now, you did mention something because of the change of with the pandemic that you've been able to do technology-wise. And you said you were able to do a digital site visit. Could you give some explanation on how that would actually work? Because is somebody controlling a camera? How does that work if that is part of the case, or how does that go about?
Yeah, it's, you know, I wish it was something super complicated, but, you know, again, let's bang on Jocko again. It's simple, not easy. Let's FaceTime and you show me the stuff that scares you. Okay. And we've done that. Now, based on my knowledge, let's show me some of the stuff I know that you have that scares me. And then let's go through your loss runs. Let's do an analysis on last 3 years of what your losses have been. And then let's go look at that stuff and, you know, getting that done in 45 minutes and then returning an end product to the customer with some helpful advice, some resources. And then that, again, that olive branch, that call me back when this gets more scary. That's kind of how it looks. I mean, there's a lot of technology there. I know some people are sending Google glasses and wearing GoPros. And again, simplicity rules. The customer doesn't want to do anything but grab the phone they already have in their pocket or purse and walk around for you and have an honest conversation about what scares them. They don't want to go through your checklist. They don't want to hear about what you think their best work should look like. They want to do their best work. And you're there to help them as a safety professional at the insurance care or even the broker side.
So if people want to find out more about what you're doing or more information about your organization, where can they go to find out more?
Definitely pinnacle.com is a great place to start. I'm on LinkedIn. I don't even know.
Do you accept everybody that actually looks for you on LinkedIn?
Not if I can tell they're like a digital sales rep for some algorithm that's been around for 5 years, then I don't say yes. But you know, if you want to talk about this or anything I said resonated, or by the way, if you want to come work for me, we're hiring. I think it's a great opportunity to network, and yeah, LinkedIn is a great place to start. I'm pretty active on there. And then, you know, pinnacle.com, we got great resources. If you're in Colorado and you're not a policyholder, I strongly recommend you look at breaking off your work comp piece just to Pinnacle, because, and I'll just say this with confidence, we own the caring market in comp. And I would say the nation, we don't get to compete against the whole nation because we're kind of pinned down in Colorado. But being pinned down in Colorado is also our superpower, because if we burn bridges in Colorado, we're out of business. So if you're a Colorado business, give us a call or call your agent and say you want to be with Pinnacle, because you're going to get access to me and you're not going to get a $450 bill, which is what I would charge someone on the consulting side. So, yeah, I really appreciate the time, Jay. And I look forward to hearing more of your podcast. And I love your short little hitters. I don't know if people love those 5 minutes. Again, friction, right? I got 5 minutes, Jay. Give me your best 5 minutes. I really appreciate those. I just want to give you that shout out.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, Josh, I really do appreciate you coming on to the show today.
Thank you.
Want more of the Jay Allen Show? Go to safetyfm.com.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.
Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.